of my favourite sayings. Yes, you had a question? Yes, there you are. You're saying that if a lay person can get into jhana, please correct me if I'm wrong, understanding you, then why be a monk or a nun? Is that what you're saying? Very nearby. It's interesting that I mentioned yesterday that this is my advertising recruitment plan for the Sangha, more monks, more nuns. If you get into jhana, and you know that bliss, you will want to become a monk or a nun. Sometimes people ask me. I used to go to the prison in Australia. I actually like being a monk in a Western country, because you have much more fun, because people have no clue about Buddhism at all. And I was going to the prison, and one of the prison officers was giving me a lift back to the monastery. He wasn't a Buddhist, he wasn't even religious, but he was like inquisitive, and he asked me, "What do you monks do up there in your monastery?" And this is actually what he said. He said, "See, look to me, do you have any women up there?" They're not at all respectful, Australians. I said, "No, we don't have any women." He said, "Do you have any, call it hooch?" It's like alcohol. "No, there's no alcohol." He said, "Any drugs?" I said, "No, we have no drugs." And he said, "Well, what do you do up there then?" And I said, "We meditate." "What do you do that for?" "Because meditation is the highest happiness which a human being could experience. So that's why we don't need women. Why we don't need TVs, why we don't need alcohol, why we don't need drugs, why we don't need all those pleasures, because we've got another pleasure." If a monk or a nun was not enjoying their life, they would not stay. Either they have to enjoy their life because they're giving to others and serving and getting the pleasure of serving, or they're getting the pleasure of living a very high moral life, or they're getting the pleasure of meditation, then they will stay as monks or nuns. But if they're getting no pleasure or happiness at all, they cannot stay. After a while, they go back into the world. But a person, a lay person who's got deep meditation, they can't stay in the lay life. They want to become a monk or a nun, because they've tasted something which is so beautiful and lovely that things of the world can no longer hold them. Why was it that in Buddhism the monks and nuns are celibate, when in other religions you can have like priests or imams getting married and having family? It's because the Eightfold Path, especially when you develop deep meditation, means you don't need that anymore. Sometimes people in the West said, "You monks are sexually repressed." No, we're not. So we're just choosing a more delicious enjoyment. Does that make sense to you? Okay. Is there another question? Yes? In addition to a very high standard of sila, is fourth jhana necessary for enlightenment? Essential. No, only a jhana is necessary for enlightenment. This is a controversial point. But I ask each one of you, if you want to find the answer to that, to look in the Mahamalunkya Putta Sutta, It's the 64th sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. In that sutta, there's a very beautiful simile. It says, in particular, to attain anagami, you can't attain arahat without having anagami first. The only way to attain anagami or beyond is through one of the jhanas. And the Lord Buddha said, it is like trying to get to the heartwood of a tree without going through the bark and the sapwood. You cannot do it. In the same way, you cannot get to enlightenment, to anagami, this is what, non-returner, or arahat. You cannot get to that without going through a jhana. So, Maha Malunkya Putta Sutta, number 64. Please read it for yourself. It's a very accurate and good translation, if you don't know Pali, by Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi of the Buddhist Publication Society in Kandy, Sri Lanka. So if you want to become enlightened, just meditate. Who knows, there's another day left for those meditating. I did actually tell people, I shouldn't have said this, if you don't get enlightened, you can ask for your money back. Any other question? Yes. How long does the jhana last? Sometimes the very weakest jhanas should last half an hour or more. That's for the very weak ones. If you really get into a very deep one, they last for many hours. Sorry? Sometimes days, the very, very deep ones. But you don't need to worry about it. There was an Indonesian monk who used to get into jhanas. He was a lay person. And I remember him telling me once that he was actually in the jungle and he got into a very deep meditation. He doesn't know how long he was in that meditation, but it was many days. Interestingly, that when he came out again, sort of he noticed that there was many leaves and twigs on the ground. There had been a heavy rainstorm and floods. And he was right in the middle of it. He didn't know a thing. These are really great stories, these, because this is actually the power of these states. And sometimes it's nice to give Buddhism a little bit of like spice and flavour. Yes? No. Do women need to be reborn as a man to become enlightened? No. Somebody once asked, actually, this was this monk in Taiwan. It was like two Americans. You know what American women are like? They went to this monk in Taiwan and said, can women become enlightened? He said, no, they can't. And these women started getting really angry, like American women are. You know, what do you mean we can't be enlightened? And then he said, neither can men. He said you have to get beyond being a man and a woman to become enlightened. A nice way of putting it, it's just an approximation. The body doesn't become enlightened, the mind does. And your mind is neither male nor female. You have a female body. You have a Malaysian body. But your mind is neither Malaysian, nor American, nor Australian. Your mind has no nationality, it has no gender, it has no age. That's why you can become enlightened. You can't go to the forest and meditate. Soon you'll be able to. In Australia, I'm building a nun's forest monastery. 563 acres of forest for women to meditate in. No men. Men will have to be a woman in the next life to go there. And men can go to a male monastery. Because I've known many women with good meditation. And I think it's a great shame that women haven't got the opportunity also to practice in the forest. As long as women know how to meditate and get into deep meditation, they'll be very happy living a secluded life. In other traditions, in the Christian tradition, there are many monasteries just for women. They're run by women. And there have been many great women saints. In the time of the Buddha, there were some fantastic women arahats. Even very recently in Thailand, there was one very great woman arahat. I read her books, and they're just such wonderful dhamma. This is a resource in the religion that needs to be tapped. So, I'm starting a woman's monastery in Perth. It's going to be tough in the forest. No televisions, no computers. One meal a day. Shaving your hair. That's what was necessary. If there's no other enjoyments in that monastery, there's no other avenues to distract your attention, if it's only meditation, nothing else, you've got no choice but to find your happiness in the world of the mind. Yep. Is it easier for a man or a woman, or yeah, is it easier for a monk or a nun to get into a jhanas than a lay person? Yes, it is. Because of our renunciation, we've been practicing this for a long time. However, it's not impossible for a lay person if they keep on trying. This is one of the reasons why the Lord Buddha established the Sangha for male and female, because it gives the best possible opportunity. As someone said the other, they're not here tonight, they said the other night, they said, like, what is like the people can actually walk by foot, or they can get on a bicycle, they can get in the train. What's the aeroplane to enlightenment? I said, the Sangha. That's the fastest, most convenient way. However, lay people can. It's an interesting question which I thought you were asking. Is it easier for a man or a woman, or male or female, whether they're monastic or not, to get into jhanas? And my experience from teaching for many years now is women have an easier time getting into jhanas than men. But men get greater insight out of them. So in the end, it evens up. I'll be a great diplomat. One of the reasons why women have an easier chance, easier way into jhanas, is because the jhanas are basically emotional states. You have to feel your way into them. You have to suspend your judgmental, analytical mind. However, to make sense out of them, you have to get your analytical mind going after the jhana and really start to analyze them. So women have an easier time. This is only a generalization. Women have an easier time accessing the jhanas, but men have a greater ease in understanding them. Analytical mind comes in after the jhana. When the jhana's finished, so often you don't want to think after the jhana. You're just enjoying the bliss of that state. And sometimes that happiness lasts for a long, long time, sometimes even many days. You've got a big smile on your face. However, this is where, like a teacher, would really encourage you, even force you to analyze those states, rather than just indulge in the bliss afterwards. Can it be dangerous just alone practicing jhana? If you've got a good foundation in the Dhamma, you've studied a lot, you've learned a lot, and you've been around other teachers, it won't be really dangerous. If a person has never done it in their life before and they have no real understanding of Buddhism, then maybe it could be. Sometimes people think they're enlightened. They get these jhanas to the powerful states. And sometimes a teacher needs to come along and say, no, that's not enlightened. Usually you go mentally off. It's very rare this happens. If a person is predisposed to like imaginings, especially if a person has got some schizophrenic tendencies before they meditate, and they get to that stage just before the jhanas, where they're saying you get these very complex nimittas, then if they start to believe in those, then they can go off. For most people, no trouble. So that's why sometimes you've got to be very careful to make sure that anyone who's meditating has got no tendencies in that direction or no like medical history in that direction. Yep. Sometimes the people who come close to death see their whole life flash in front of them. And how does that compare to real life experiences, to near death experiences? Now that is very actually strange, because you know, I had an experience like that when I was a young man, when I fell down a cliff. And it was a strange thing that I started falling down. I thought this was the end of me, because I was walking in Scotland, there were some very tall cliffs there. I lost my footing, I went over the edge. And I saw this cliff face in front of me. I twisted round. My face was towards the cliff. My back was towards open space. I saw this cliff face passing me, passing me, passing me, passing me. And it seemed such a long time. And then I felt something solid underneath me. I bent my feet, took the fall, and I stood up again. And I looked up, and the top of the cliff was only just above my head. To me, when I was falling, it was very strange. The consciousness had been warped, had been stretched. And what was actually only about 8 or 9 feet, I thought was about 80 or 90 feet. And that's why I thought I was dying. And again, a lot of my past, actually, it was only 16 or 17 years of past, it wasn't that much. But I had that experience, and many other people, when they have car crashes, and they survive. It's as if everything goes in slow motion. I think what actually happens there is, because of fear, just chemicals get secreted into the blood and consciousness becomes just so much more alert because of just self-protection. And consciousness is so much more alert. You're actually picking up much more every second. And I think that's why time tends to go slow in such emergencies. Why your life passes up in front of you, I'm not quite sure. But it happens very often at death. So if you've had a good life, what comes up in front of you is very nice. If you've done a bad life, what comes up in front of you, oh dear. And that'll be your last thought before you die. So make sure you live a very good life, and then what you see at the end is a very beautiful movie, rather than a horror story. So someone else said something over here? No. Does that make sense to you? Sorry? You say, in meditation it's a what? Sorry? Oh, that's right, yeah. In meditation, some of the nimittas which come up in meditation, before you get the very nice nimittas, These are creations of the mind which you should ignore. These are truly creations of the mind. However, some of the flashes which come up to you when you have the experience, you think you're dying. You know, the life in front of your face. And that is actually the real experiences of your life. Memories of important events in your life. But it's interesting also with memory, that much of memory, again, is warped. Because if you say you remember your childhood, what you're actually doing is you're remembering a memory of 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 your childhood. Memory you cannot rely upon, not that type of memory. Even I'm told that policemen who investigate traffic accidents, even about 1 hour after the accident, they ask all the witnesses what happened. And all the witnesses would always give different versions. Even though they were there at the time, even after 1 hour, their memory has changed. We used to play a game at school, I'm sure you played it. You have a whole line of people, and somebody whispers something to the first person, and they turn around and whisper it to the next person, and they whisper it to the next person, and to the next person. But by the time you get to the end of the line, you find out what they heard, but what you said at the front is completely different. There was actually a story from the British Army during the First World War. The order from the general was, send reinforcements, we're going to advance. When it got to the troops at the front line, it was, the old British money, send 3 and 4 pence, we're going to a dance. Because these things get changed, and when you have like memories, this is what happens. Where we remember a memory of a memory of a memory of a memory of a memory. Every little time it gets changed a little bit. When we get to the final memory, it's very different than what actually happened. So sometimes the memory of our childhood is not what happened. It's just like one of those games. But over time, repeating it again and again and again, it gets more and more distorted. Yeah. Do you have to be in jhana to be able to go into a Brahma realm? No, it's if you inclined towards those jhanas, you've done a lot of jhanas in your life, that when you die, that you'll have the experience, the training, but that's what you're inclined towards when you die, you go into a jhana realm. But even if you go into the jhana realm like that, without understanding what those jhanas are, what those that mind is, if you're not even a stream winner, you go into those Brahma realms, you have a wonderful time, and then you come back and have to start all over again. You're still in samsara, you haven't got your way out here. But this is an interesting thing. Not many people know this in the suttas. That if you're a stream winner, and you die in a jhana, you automatically become an anagami. Become a non-returner. You never come back to this world. Lord Buddha said that in one of the very obscure suttas in the Pali Canon. When I read that, I thought, yeah, that's right. It's interesting. Yeah? Okay, so there's a train over there. Can you shout up, please? Or just tell it to the person in front of you and they can tell it to the next person over there. Not very joking. Okay, yeah. It's saying this is a very difficult question. You're saying that, like will, you haven't really got much choice about these things. And so what about karma? It's actually, that's how like karma works, because it limits you so much. You still have possibilities of doing something. But a lot of time, you've got so much karma from the past, like influencing you. It's like all these people telling you what to do. You know, who should I follow? Who should I follow? And the karma from your past, sort of, is it influencing you? You've just got a little bit of freedom there to go one way or the other way. Sometimes I often wonder myself, like, why did I end? Why did I end up as a monk? And it's obvious there have been a lot of karmic forces made me be a monk. Basically, I had no choice in the matter. But sometimes these things are like that. So it looks as if you've got will, and it appears that way. But if you know the Dhamma, Buddha said there's no one in there. Anatta, no self, no soul. So who actually can be doing this willing? It's all these influences on you, all these causes, your parents, your upbringing. Even the monk who's teaching you now, I'm influencing your will whether you like it or not. So I don't know if that answers your question, because it's a very hard question to answer. I think it's not your karma to have an answer tonight. Yeah? Oh yeah, do people obtain psychic powers from the jhanas? Yes, they usually do. Not all people obtain psychic powers from the jhanas, but a lot of people do. Simply because the mind becomes very powerful. However, that you only get jhanas, one of the causes for jhanas is very pure precepts. Very good livelihood, very good ethics. And if you get psychic powers and start misusing them, then they disappear. Just like in the time of Lord Buddha, there was Devadatta, who was a cousin of the Lord Buddha, who was also a monk. He had a very, very strict code of conduct. In fact, he was even a vegetarian. He wouldn't eat meat, even though it was not forbidden for monks. He decided not to, so he was very, very strict in his rules of discipline. And he could get into jhanas, and he had psychic powers. But he became proud of those psychic powers. He had jhanas, but he didn't use wisdom. As I say, this is not a path of samatha which I'm teaching. It has to go with vipassana, with insight. And he didn't practice any vipassana, just the jhanas. And as such, he became proud. And he was abusing his psychic powers. And they left him. I gave the story the other day about the monk in the forest who had jhanas and could fly, went to the king's palace. And this is very, very, very careful with psychic powers. He was levitating and he saw a beautiful girl. And at that moment he forgot how to levitate. And he had to go crashing into the ground. Luckily he didn't hurt himself. So before you do psychic powers, make sure that you know you've got a very strong basis in morality and understanding. Otherwise you might be levitating up there somewhere and forget. Go crashing to the ground. Yeah? What a dream is, you're asking about dreams. Dream is an agitation of the mind during sleep. So the mind isn't at peace. Just the same way that people can come to this meditation retreat, they don't have to think about anything. The food is supplied to you, I tell all the jokes, you don't need to worry about anything at all. But You don't have to think, but people still do. When you sleep, you don't have to think. But it's our nature to think, to agitate the mind. And so when the mind gets agitated in sleep, it creates these visions, these dreams. A person who meditates